Hi, everybody. Welcome to SEND Network's ongoing Training for Trainers resource. Thanks for joining us on our journey to learn together how to make your transformational training even better. We want to encourage and empower you to keep growing in your confidence and competence as a trainer. Now, here are the hosts for today.
Our guest today is Bob Logan. Bob has been with us before, and we're thankful that he's with us again. Bob is one of the guys on the leading edge of helping to train church planters. I remember using the Church Planter Toolkit to train church planters. And Bob is published author and has a DMin from Fuller Seminary and has been doing this for a long time. So thanks for joining us, Bob.
Glad to be with you.
So would you walk us through some of your defining moments in your history as a trainer of church planters? Who influenced you the most? How did they influence you?
Yeah. In my doctorate ministry program is where I met Carl George.
Wow. Okay.
And so I had opportunity to interact with Carl George, and through the experience of doing the Fuller Institute, How to Lead, Manage the Local Church seminars, which we did like 33 of those over the course of the years. Those were two-day seminars when you actually did multi-day events. And so I had lots of time to hang out with him as we were speaking together. And so he was quite a mentor to me and helped me to understand how you can look at a ministry as a process and how to facilitate people coming on board. One of the key principles he taught me was, as a consultant, is that help is not help if it's not perceived as helpful. And so therefore, you need to make sure that you're addressing questions and issues that people are dealing with. Mm. He helped me to understand that you only teach incidentally through your outlines. You teach irresistibly through your stories.
Wow. That's good.
And so there's all sorts of things that he helped me to understand in terms of processing people and helping them to come on board. And he was very instrumental as a consultant in our church to help us even in the whole transition to a cell-based metatype model. And for those of you who understand church history, know what that's talking about, what's now called missional communities, perhaps, and you know, how to organize that in a way to move forward. So to think about the social architecture of things was very critical, because as a trainer, you have to help people figure out not only what needs to be done, but how do you mobilize the people to get there, and then how do you organize that in a way that allows it to be sustainable and reproducible. And so a lot of that thinking of how do you increase ministry capacity and that sort of thing came through Carl. Mm-hmm. Another key influence in my life was John Wimber. He was one of the instructors in my doctor ministry program, and he helped in terms of the practical people management side of things. Hmm. He was the one that introduced me to the Show How Training and Jesus model of I do, you watch, I do, you help, you do, I help, you do, I watch and encourage, and then you do and somebody else watches. Mm-hmm. And even thinking about then some of the processes of when you have group activity, how do you monitor the room? You know, Wimber was the one that taught me when you get people into small group process to discuss, you take readings of the volume of the room. Mm-hmm. and notice the rapidity of speech. And if the volume is going up and the speech is fast, then you need to give them more time to process. And then when you start hearing that peak and start to come down a little bit, then you give a 2-minute warning. And that sometimes that'll re-energize the curve.
Well, so as a trainer, what's the 2-minute warning? What's that?
The 2-minute warning, you say 2 more minutes. Or when you're in a different language, I say it in the language of the people, or even here, just to help people have cross-cultural awareness, I say dos minutos más. Yeah. and 2 more minutes. Okay. And what that does is gives people the respect and time to finish up their conversations. But sometimes that 2-minute warning actually re-engages them with more energy and focus. And so that what I find is when you give a certain amount of time for an exercise, you don't stay rigid to the time. What you're doing is monitoring the energy of the crowd and the degree of focus that they have. And so then you sometimes, if the energy is starting to peak and you give the 2-minute warning and it keeps going down, then you finish sooner than you anticipated. Other times you give a longer period of time. And very practical kinds of things like that was Wimber helping me. The other kind of thing that he gave me some insight in is the how do you process people? And he introduced the concept to me of burping. You know, that you'd be a non-anxious presence would be the term we would use today in the midst of change. And when somebody is having difficulty processing change, it's I don't recommend doing this at home, but you take that person and put them over your shoulder and give them a chance to just sort of vent and get it all out. You just do some listening and unpack what they're thinking and stay calm. And then after it's all over, you say, wow, there is a lot of stuff going on, isn't there? And then say something like, yeah, but God's at work. And isn't it great? We're going to be together through it.
Wow.
And, you know, that whole change management and the way in which you process things in that regard. And see, all of those kinds of dynamics are all crucial into the training process because you're really trying to facilitate change.
Yeah.
And so it's what I call process leadership is the critical skill that a trainer needs to know and practice.
Bob, I do a bit of how do I put it? You mentor me. And as we're mentoring, what's amazing to me is I'm listening to all the things that you know. Like in the two interviews we've done, I've been mind blown with some of the things you've said. Do you ever feel the frustration or is it sometimes you think, I know all these things. They need an outlet because I'm listening as a trainer thinking, everybody needs to hear all of this information. And I know that this is just the tip of the iceberg. I know that there's so much more. How do you leverage, I guess a better way of asking this question is, how do you leverage the mountain of what you know and it, with the need of the generation coming up that needs to know these things, that there has to be a distribution channel. In other words, I think of it as kind of like these guys who know how to do things like restore grandfather clocks. One of my friends is one of the top three craftsmen. He's almost 70 years old. He lives in Great Britain. He is the end of the line, right? He has no one mentoring under him. I always say to him, this cannot die with you. This is, his stuff is in Christie's of London. I mean, he's world renowned for this. He lives on a little quiet farm in Wales. No one's going to get what's inside his head. As a trainer, how do you leverage, in other words, how do you maneuver the gear and lever to know what needs to get out versus what needs to stay in?
I think there's two ways your question could be taken. One question is how do you do your training in a way that is sustainable? And how do you actually help facilitate the passing on of principles and wisdom and processes that can outlive you? That's one side of that equation. And so in that regard, I'm focusing now a lot on the development of cohorts and processes to work with people so that are younger and able then to learn these things through their own experience and to figure out then the processes and dynamics that will long outlive the value of whatever information that is there. So I think that's a key component of what I'm working on right now.
So the reason I ask is because our trainers are going to have this struggle where they're going to think, I know this stuff. And obviously, as we've said, we're facilitators of transformational breakthroughs. But how do you leverage what you know that you, in other words, there's a judgment call that has to be made sometimes. This is when I kick down this wisdom at this strategic moment versus this is when I withhold. How do you leverage those judgment calls in the moment for our trainers coming up that they're not going to have as much as you in experience and wisdom, but they're going to have some. How do they make that judgment call?
Yeah, that is the second part of that question, you know, which is in the moment, how do you decide what's needed? And so I'm always listening for what is the spirit up to? What is God up to in this moment? And what's the one key thing that might be most useful? You know, we have a tendency with our, when we have a lot of experience and a lot of wisdom, we want to tell our stories and this, that, the other thing. They don't need to hear your stories. What they need is a key question, a key insight, an analogy that might be helpful. And so as you kind of get discernment on what that key thing is, then you want to go back and say, okay, what's the one thing I could pull off the shelf or I could draw from that might be useful to help them get that breakthrough as you talk about. I love that term, you know, the breakthrough for transformation. You know, that's very, very powerful. So it's really trying to figure out what God's up to and being sensitive to the spirit and keep asking questions to probe and then to figure out the common threads that's there. And then as you unpack that through a lot of listening and asking questions and so forth, then you might have some discernment about something and you could either ask it in the form of a question or you could just share it with saying, could I make an observation? Wow. Or could I share my perspective with you?
Yeah. So you get permission to do that.
I always do.
Yeah.
Because if people don't want to hear it, don't waste your breath.
Yeah. Yeah.
On the other hand, it also opens them up more.
Yeah.
Because as a trainer, that I'm much more in the catching mode by virtue of asking questions and helping them to process within their own teams and various things, so that I try to minimize the amount of actual input I give.
Yeah.
You want to do just enough.
Just enough. Just
but not
enough.
Too much.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. So you've already mentioned several traits of a great trainer. But could you kind of more succinctly articulate those? I mean, one you just shared is like being sensitive to the Holy Spirit and that type of thing. So if you had to say the top 3 to 5 traits that you're looking for in an excellent trainer, what would those be and why would you say that?
First off would be spiritual sensitivity, which I've already talked about.
Yeah.
I think the second one is outcome focused. In other words, you have to have clarity on what the final product looks like. Mm-hmm. Now, we do know what the final product needs to look like. It's disciples who make disciples, who gather in groups, who demonstrate the kingdom of God in community, on mission, living and loving like Jesus, and seeing those beginning to grow and multiply. And then in many church models, they then gather for a celebration kind of time. And engaged in ministry to the poor and changing the community. So we know what it looks like. Now, yeah. The question is how you get there and how you actually navigate that. See that Jesus didn't tell us to plant churches. He told us to make disciples.
Right.
And churches are the result of disciple making. And so we have to keep that main thing the main thing. And be very outcome focused. And then our processes then can be varied and dynamic in terms of how we help people navigate through the uniquenesses of the cultures and peoples in which they're working. So outcome focused, I think, is critical. And for any particular training experience you're trying to do, you need to understand what's the key thing you're trying to help them to grasp and to get so that they go away with something of great value. And then the third key, what I would say would be process oriented. Mm-hmm. In other words, you affirm this in your whole training process, you know, of the discovery process, mm-hmm. and how to orchestrate times of reflection, small group processing, activity to be able to help people to discover where God is at work and some of the key principles and insights to be able to move it forward. And I think the fourth one, if I were to add it, is to let that process be reproducible. Mm-hmm. As a trainer, only model, only do what other people can do also.
Wow.
In other words, I always make sure that whatever I do in training is simple enough that anybody else could take it and do it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That I don't want to be the star, because if I pulled out the A game and just did a whiz-bang kind of a thing, that would be a phenomenal training experience, but it would totally be discouraging because it's not reproducible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That's really good.
I remember one time my associate, I was doing some training in the old New Church Incubator. You know, that was the original training environment for church planters, which was the predecessor that produced the Church Planters Toolkit. Mm-hmm. And one day I was doing this kind of training process, and my associate came up kind of critical and says, "Bob, you're not giving your A game. You know, you're flat. Your energy level's low."
Yeah.
And I just kept going on. I ignored him and kept going on. And then about an hour later, he comes back. He says, "Oh, I get it. You're modeling it so the people can say, I not only can do that, I can do it better." And that's empowering.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was doing. Well spotted.
My energy was low, but I was being deliberate about the methodology.
Awesome. You know, it was funny. Mac and I were talking about field training the other day, and you know, we were talking about that exact thing, that it has to be reproducible. If your specialty is missional engagement, you can't leave people in the dust. And I think that's what Paul and Jesus both did, was that they modeled. If you think of all the stuff that Jesus did, he didn't suddenly use Superman powers to fly around and say, "Hey, you know, look what I can do."
Yeah.
He did things that he said, "Greater things than I do, you will do." Yes. And everything he did, including raising people from the dead, he empowered his disciples to do.
Yes. And in fact, the more gifted you are in a particular area, the more you have to dial it back to say, wow, how can non-gifted people do this?
That's so good. Amen.
And so therefore, like when you're strong in leadership, then you have to say, okay, what are the few essential leadership skills you need to help to equip people with, and do it in a way that just the ordinary person can do.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So Bob, obviously things are different than, you know, when I planted, when you planted, when Peyton planted, and of course, Peyton's still on the front lines of planting. How is church planting different today than it was, say, 20 years ago, 25 years ago? And then how does that impact how we train church planters today?
Probably the biggest macro difference is that there's minimal memory of church,
okay,
among the people that you're seeking to reach. Mm-hmm. Back when I started, going back 40 years ago, you know, people weren't very churched, but they remembered church. And they knew that when they had some sort of a spiritual awakening or some sort of a need, began to want to search for God in some way, they at least knew where to go. They knew who to reach out to. And so they had that memory that allowed you an advantage in your connection of making disciples. Mm. Today, people don't have that memory of church. And the pictures of church that they have, if they even know what goes on there, are negative. Mm-hmm. And not positive. And so one of the key things that you need to work with is, how do you help people to actually engage in authentic relationships with genuine care and service that is not agenda focused. You know, you got to just love your neighbor as yourself. When we were doing our house church planting thing just a number of years ago, that was one of the key things we had to think about, you know, was, well, we don't want to reach out to people with an agenda, you know, and we finally figured that out by just saying, well, we're just going to love our neighbor as ourselves and do that with, well, and do that without any expectation of return. But then keep our eyes and ears open for that discernment of when God's at work, and then invite them into a process of considering following Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so I think that part of how we need to help train people then is how to discover those kinds of processes and relationships, environments, relationships, and processes that help them to meaningfully engage with people. Mm-hmm. And then move it forward toward actually helping them to get toward the invitation to consider following Jesus. And so that has profound impact in terms of how we train, because the people that we're working with often, as planters even, then need to have that same kind of relational journeying together, processing it as you go kind of experience. So I think that there's a lot more relationships and community that's needed in the training of church planters, whereas before you could just do a workshop with some process stuff with follow-up coaching would be sufficient.
Okay. So perhaps more attention on the whole missional engagement strategy, because culture is just different. It's just so resistant to church.
Yeah, that's true. And I think we also have to take much more seriously what would Jesus be doing, mm-hmm, in today's world, and where would he be hanging out, and what would he be doing?
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember a conversation when we were involved but involved in the house church thing and starting to move that direction. We were in Chicago, and my colleague and I were waiting in a taxi cab for another person to join us. And the guy was talking to us, friendly banter and so forth. And he was swearing like crazy. And then he asked what we did. And my friend said, oh, we're pastors. and he said, oh, excuse my language, you know? And I said, no, it's fine. I understood everything you were saying. And I said, but you could help us out, you know, and it told us what we were doing, this new kind of thing. And so I said, if Jesus were in Chicago today, where would he be hanging out? What would he be doing? And he said, well, he'd be with the sinners. And then he stopped and says, well, come to think of it, we're all sinners. He would be with the sinners.
That's good.
And he was describing what Jesus would look like. And until we actually manifest what Jesus looks like in a way that's authentic and real, that we're not going to have the credibility. And so we have to figure out how to hang out and be authentic.
How do you personally do that? I mean, in a previous call that we had with you, you know, you talked about how important it is for trainers to actually engage with lost culture. You know, I'm finding it is a challenge for me now. I mean, I'm spending more time with trainers of planters as well as training planters. So I'm just really involved in the Christian community. What are some things that you do to stay engaged with the lost culture?
Well, I ride a bicycle.
Okay.
And so I seek to find groups that I can ride with that have non-Christians. That's a natural thing that I do anyway.
Yeah.
And so that's one option that I have. The other is I do some volunteer work. Right now I'm volunteering in the Salvation Army, working with people that are in a transitional living situation, helping to teach life skills and opportunity for some discipling in that kind of context. I think the key question that when I started down that path of journey myself was my coach asked me the question, well, Bob, how can you free up 1 hour a week?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that wasn't too hard to do. And so he said, so what's the best use of that hour?
Yeah.
And then after I got that established, how can you free up 3 to 5 hours a week?
Mm-hmm.
What's the best use of those 3 to 5 hours? Mm-hmm. And you get discernment from God and partner with other people in that journey. But I think we need to all be doing something
sure
that keeps us on that fresh side of the equation. Yeah. And so engagement of culture is a critical piece. But then here's where many church planters have trouble. They spend a lot of time hanging out in these third places and so forth, but then they never bridge to disciple making. Mm-hmm. And so you need a way to then say, how do you have strategies to actually bridge from these relationships you have to bridge toward helping them consider what it means to follow Jesus? Mm-hmm. And some of that following actually comes as you serve together and meeting some particular need. I think that's one of the paths that's very important. Mm-hmm. So I think our personal involvement as trainers in that journey makes us practitioners and fellow journeyers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then we understand from our own experience the challenges and difficulties of that. And so then we don't come across as a know-it-all and rather can be an encourager to them and even ask better questions. And they know if you have that integrity on the inside.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Hey, we're getting close to the end of our time. I had a couple more questions I hope you can speak to, at least briefly. One of them is an interesting question, and that is, how do you leverage the pain that you've experienced personally in your life? And you don't need to open up a bunch of back doors of your life to tell us about all that pain. But how do you leverage that pain as a trainer in a positive way? Because we all go through struggles and trials and difficulties.
Oh my, yes.
Yeah.
Well, for one, we need to actually engage it and process through it and allow God to bring us healing and comfort. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, I had one particular time when I was really, really deeply and wrongly wounded by someone. And I did seek help from a counselor to make sure that I was tracking, you know, and there wasn't some issues that I needed to be dealing with and process sure. that. But the Lord prompted me a couple of ways. One is he prompted me to pray for that person. Mm-hmm. And to pray God would bless their person. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I consistently pray that every time the pain came up and it brought healing. And I know I was healed when God did bless them and I was happy.
Wow, that's good.
And so if you learn from that kind of experience that you have those things, you don't need to necessarily tell your story, but you can say, oh, I really feel for you. And you can say it and they know you do because you've been there.
Wow. That's good.
Because they don't necessarily need to hear all the details of it, but how God has worked in your life and then leveraging that for wisdom. And it's 2 Corinthians chapter 1, you know, the comfort you've received, you can pass on to others.
So the person that I'm training is not my therapist, but they can sense the genuineness if they've experienced pain, you can identify to a degree, then they can experience that genuineness. That's good. Okay, mm-hmm. So one last thing before we wrap up, and that is, are there some things that maybe you found to be helpful that you have done historically as a trainer? And I know you don't know, like you can't look over the shoulder of every church planter trainer in America, but you probably have a sense of the kinds of things that are happening out there in the training world. Because that's your world. What are some things that you think have been historically helpful that maybe aren't being done anymore, that you wish were being done?
I think that involvement of teams together in the training environment, I think, is really important.
Okay.
That if you just have planters, that makes a great support group for them and a great environment, but then some don't have the capacity to do well at translating that stuff to the people they work with.
Okay.
So wherever you can to involve planters with their teams or with some of their key people, I think is a critical piece, because sometimes the planter's the blockage and the key leaders are the ones that can get it and help burp it through.
Wow.
Other times that you need to help facilitate the transformation in the key leaders, which then helps leverage with a key impact. I think that's a critical piece that sometimes gets missed. And so when I do trainings, I try to do a training that involves a team.
Wow.
And you do the same price for a team as you do for an individual.
Okay. So and now our model is a model of focusing on the planter. So I hear the wisdom of what you're saying. So what advice would you give us to, you know, maybe not scrap our model, but to kind of figure out ways to expand that to include more of the teams?
Well, the core question then would be, what could you put into the hands of planters that they can do with their teams as they go? So what I would do is whatever training you did with planters, they experience it, get it, and then figure out, okay, now how am I going to reproduce this kind of same process with my people so that they get it and apply it?
Yeah.
So I would make sure that they walk away with a tool that they can use with their team. Yeah. And then secondly, I would make sure that there was coaching follow-up to help planters individualize and customize how that actually works out in their own setting.
Yeah, that's good. All right, one last question, and then we got to wrap it up, and that is, all right, so I'm a trainer. I'm getting ready to launch a cohort. I'll have three, maybe five church planters in my cohort. What are some things that you would tell me to get ready to actually launch this new cohort?
Well, I'd have the conversations in the parking lot before they join to help them understand what the destination is, what the outcome is, mm-hmm. help them count the cost of what the commitments are, what are they going to covenant to do, it'd be a part of this process to move forward. Then I would have an orientation with them, like at the trailhead, to help give them just the big picture of the process, then start out with the training process first with show how training, mm-hmm. With coaching, and then to be able to have gatherings together so they can learn from their own experience. So it's a very much of an action reflection kind of model, mm-hmm. Okay. As they're journeying together, and that campfire that you have to be able to process learnings and wisdom and troubleshoot and support and make sure that you're celebrating along the way. And then at the end of that journey, to have an actual celebration time and then ask two questions. What's next and who else?
Wow. Okay. What's next and who else? That's brilliant. Thank you for that. So thank you, Bob, for joining us. Peyton had to drop out of the call. He had another appointment to catch. So we also thank Peyton Jones for being part of this call too. Tell us your website. What's the website? People can go to find out more.
LoganLeadership.com.
Okay.
And that'll get you connected and you can sign up. And then I'd also encourage the, if you're a planter, training planters, the Missional Journey book is outstanding. And then From Followers to Leaders, I was giving a little bit of an answer from that. You can go in more depth there.
Yeah.
And plus as trainers, we could always grow in our coaching skills because good training is essentially helping people with a coaching process to be able to get from where they are to where God wants them to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. So that last book that you mentioned, or you didn't mention the book, but it's Coaching 101, which I've read, has been very, very helpful to me. Good. Well, thanks again, Bob, for being with us. Your persona, your wisdom. It's encouraging. It's inspiring. So thanks for sharing some time with us.
You're welcome. Blessings.
Thanks for listening today. Our mission at Send Network Training is to equip multiplying leaders with reproducible systems to plant more healthy churches. You can follow us on Twitter at Send Network Trainers or on Facebook at Send Network Church Planter Trainers. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. This podcast was made possible by the Send Network of the North American Mission Board.